It's the Kim Munson Show, analyzing the most important stories.
That seems to me like government is establishing a religion.
The latest in politics and world affairs.
If you give people rights, women's rights, gay rights, whatever, there can't be equal rights if there's special rights.
Today's current opinions and ideas.
Surveys show that people still really prefer freedom versus force.
Is it freedom or is it force? Let's have a conversation.
Indeed, let's have a conversation, and welcome to the Kim Munson Show. I greatly appreciate each and every one of you joining us. Today, strive for excellence, take care of your heart, your soul, your mind, and your body, live with intention. You were born into this time in history and step forward into it. We do this show as we search for truth and clarity by looking at issues through the lens of freedom versus force, force versus freedom. If something is a good idea, you shouldn't have to force people to do that. So check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You will get the first look at all of our upcoming guests, as well as our most recent op-eds and podcasts. And be sure and check, or you can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who support what we are doing. We are an independent alternative voice for all that's going on out there, and we hope that we are helping you each and every day. I get to work with a great team, and that is producer Steve, Zach, Patty, Keith, Charlie, and all the people here at Crawford Broadcasting. Happy Tuesday to you, producer Steve.
Yes, happy Tuesday, the day after the other day that we don't talk about. Let me echo that the website really is got a lot of great content on it. Anybody going there for the first time, and if they had the time to spend, they could be there for a couple hours.
There's a lot of great information there. And we've been in the process of updating the website. We are behind on America's Veterans Stories website. We don't have that where we want it yet, but there is a lot of information at the Kim Munson Show website, and be sure and check that out. The op-eds, the recaps of the shows, the podcasts, it's all there, and we're working diligently on that. Let's go ahead. We've got a great show planned for you today. This is one of my favorite shows. This is stepping into our heritage. And we are on this course of human events and going back to look at our heritage so that we can reclaim that. Many times we say we want to go back to our Constitution. I say we want to reclaim this vision of the Declaration that all men are created equal, with these inalienable rights from God of life, liberty, and pursuit of happiness. We are at a time to reclaim that. Yesterday we had a show focused with our Liberty Toastmasters colleagues on an awakening versus wokeism. And I really learned a lot from that conversation with my fellow colleague, Steve.
There, you know, you always put a great topic out in front of them, and they always rise up to the challenge very well. I mean, all of them are good. It's just as it's happening, and obviously this is a live show, and as it's happening, you just sit back and go, wow, what will, you know, I sit here in my position, it's like, what will the listeners think of this?
I know. And hopefully you think about it all day long. I certainly do, of what my colleagues bring forward. But today, this show is brought to you by the Harris family, and I'm super grateful to them for that. And we will be talking with Ben Martin. He is a patriotic historian, a former Army Ranger. He graduated from West Point, and he really brings these people alive during our heritage. And so we will be talking about these battles through New Jersey. And there's something that he had on his outline, the treachery of generals. And that'll be really interesting. I don't know quite what that's going to be. So we're dedicating the second, third, and fourth segments to Ben Martin on that. And again, thank you to the Harris family for their support on that. So I decided to go to Henry Knox for our quote today. And I didn't know much about Henry Knox. Until I got to know Ben Martin. And Henry Knox, he was just a young guy, and he had this bold idea to bring these cannons across land and rivers to get them to Boston, because Boston was under siege. And this is from the website that is dedicated to him. It says, for starters, going to Ticonderoga was a plan of Henry's design. Two-thirds of his journey was as a volunteer and on his own dime, without the full financial support of Congress, not a military conscription. Despite the hazards of winter and the difficulty of the journey, Henry's noble cannons, along with thousands of patriots, brilliantly routed the British, hereby ending the 11-month hostile siege of Boston without firing a single shot. Upon seeing the cannons on Nook's Hill, the British immediately evacuated. This, in turn, granted General Washington his first victory of the war. It was also a huge morale boost for the 13 colonies, as the city where the rebellion began was the first to be liberated. Henry Knox was reborn. He was born into poverty in Boston, raised by a single mother, and with only a fifth-grade education under his belt, managed to carve out quite a name for himself in the brave new world of America. Books were his entree. He devoured everything he could get his hands on. He was a big man with big ambitions and appetites and an even bigger heart. He was bright. He was loyal. He married well above his station, a wife he adored and who adored him back, giving up everything for her beloved Harry. He earned the respect and lifelong friendship of George Washington, was his right-hand man throughout the war, stood beside him crossing the Delaware, served in his cabinet. Their wives became close friends, too. Henry may have not signed the Declaration of Independence, but he certainly risked his neck to make it possible. He was there at Bunker Hill, at Trenton, Yorktown, Brandywine, at Valley Forge. Henry Knox was there. He was chief of artillery. He was the one who rolled out the cannons. He was the one who yelled fire. He was right in the thick of it, our Henry. First of all, is that not amazing, Steve? Does that not bring this guy alive?
It certainly does. That's a great descriptor.
So instead of, at the beginning of the show, a Henry Knox quote, I chose British General Howe after evacuating the city of Boston. When he woke up the next morning, when they saw Henry Knox's cannons on those hills, and this is what British General Howe said after evacuating the city of Boston. The rebels have done more in one night than my whole army could have done in a month. And that is American ingenuity, American hard work, American creativity. And that spirit is what is what's in America right now, what many in public office, what this socialist, communist, Marxist narrative out there is trying to stop. But we are Americans, and we go back and we reclaim this spirit of Henry Knox. And I thought that was just really, really important. Before we get into the second, third, and fourth segments, Steve, totally antithetical to Henry Knox, we could go over to Michael Hancock and his State of the City address yesterday. It's pretty remarkable. So we're going to jump in here on this. And this is from the Denver Channel. It says, Mayor Michael Hancock on Monday provided a glimmer of hope. First of all, glimmer of hope. Is that really American?
That caught my eye, too. I kind of went back and read a glimmer of hope. What, I mean, are the people of Denver that downtrodden?
Well, I would say maybe they are. When you look at what this administration has been, what has occurred to Denver, this Denver used to be called the Queen City of the Plains. Right now, I cannot tell you how many people say that they will not go into Denver anymore. I used to go into Denver a lot with my kids, take them to the zoo, take them to the Museum of Science and History, and I'm not interested. I only go into Denver if I absolutely have to. And a number of the reasons are what he was talking about. This whole homelessness thing, you talk about an industrial complex and the subsidization of the homelessness in Denver there is more and more of it. I went by someplace, it was along the highway, and there was a tent on the hill with a lawn chair next to it that they were just going to watch the traffic go by. I'm thinking, that's not your property. How is it that this city has allowed this to happen? And it's because they've subsidized it. There's so much money for those politicians and bureaucrats and interested parties in quote-unquote helping the homeless, you can see what has occurred. Instead of solving the problem has exploded, Steve.
Well, I can't debate that. In my circles of travel, which take me through certain areas, you know, on a regular basis, and the general appearance of the city, especially on the highways and places like that, it's just, it's not the Queen City anymore.
Not at all. And it used to be such a beautiful city. It's just really heartbreaking. I want to go on to the next point that he mentioned. He says, touching on the subject of increased crime throughout the city, Hancock argued the spike has been compounded by the release of violent criminals too quickly from custody. First of all. But second of all, when is it a good time to release violent criminals into society? But certainly too quickly is not a good thing.
I thought after reading through his entire speech at the, I guess it was a speech, that was probably the only real thing in there. The real, substance is that, okay, you're finally waking up to the fact that you're releasing violent criminals much too early. And is it the trickle down of this George Soros thing with getting his district attorneys and prosecutors set in place who are making this happen?
And that goes on to the next point. It says, reimagine policing and public safety. There was a task force to reimagine policing and public safety. Whenever you see that word reimagine, it's like, hold on. Anyway, it says that some of their
lipstick on a pig.
Yeah. Is decriminalizing quality of life offenses. What exactly is that? And they said other petty infractions. It says decriminalizing traffic offenses, prohibiting police from conducting searches during traffic violations, removing police traffic stops and crash reports, taking officers out of schools, ending cash bail. That's huge. And permitting safe injection sites where government is actually going to support people injecting things into their bodies that could kill. Wait, that sounds kind of like something else, doesn't it, Steve? as I was saying that. Anyway, I digress. Another thing, he says that during his State of the City address, Hancock also acknowledged that the pandemic made it very clear that the economy doesn't work for everyone equally and that more needs to be done to address the lack of opportunity for people of color as well as for women. May I just remind all of you that during the Trump administration, by reducing taxes, by reducing rules and regulations, that we were at record low unemployment. We were at record employment levels for Blacks, Hispanics, and women. That home ownership for the Black population was up 6%. Those are the policies that really help people across the spectrum. But what happens there is that that takes away the control of government, of politicians, bureaucrats, and interested parties. So, of course, his answer will be more and more government programs. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin about our heritage, and you won't want to miss that. And my shows have great sponsors, and Hooters Restaurants is sponsors of both of the shows, both the Kim Munson Show and America's Veteran Stories. And they have five locations. Their locations are Westminster, Loveland, Aurora, Lone Tree, and Colorado Springs. And I mentioned yesterday their great lunch specials, but they also have happy hour specials. And they have half off the following appetizers: beer cheese pretzels, 10 boneless wings, lots of tots, 12 buffalo shrimp, or their fried pickles. And then they have all kinds of specials on beverages as well. But a great place to get together with friends to watch some sports or just get together for great conversation. Go to my website. That is kimmunson.com. Click on my sponsors tab. I highly recommend each and every one of them. I click on the Hooters tab and you'll get all their specials there. We're going to go to break. When we come back, we'll be talking with Ben Martin about our American heritage. And this will be some of the battles through New Jersey. And he has down the treachery of generals. What is that exactly? We'll be right back.
Home ownership and private property rights help you build wealth for you and your family. RE/MAX Alliance award-winning realtor Karen Levine understands this. Supply is super tight right now. This is why you need a seasoned professional with excellent negotiating skills on your side of the table, whether buying or selling an existing home or buying a new build. As a member of the National Association of Realtors Board of Directors, Karen Levine volunteers hours of her time to help you build your American dream. Call her today at 303-877-7516. Again, that's 303-877-7516.
You'd like to get in touch with one of Kim Munson's sponsors, but you can't recall their phone number. Find a full list of advertising partners on Kim's website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim, M-O-N-S-O-N.com.
Profile America, Tuesday, July 27th. Today is National Korean War Veterans Armistice Day, marking that date in 1953 when the shooting stopped in what is sometimes called America's Forgotten War. Although the occasion doesn't rate holiday status, it does go some way towards recognizing the sacrifice of 36,000 American lives in the 3 years of combat against totalitarian aggression on the Korean Peninsula. Of the 5.7 million Americans in the military during the 1950-53 conflict, 1.8 million saw service in the Korean theater. There remain some 1.15 million veterans of the Korean War era. This includes 101,000 who also served during the Vietnam conflict in the 1960s and nearly 12,000 who began service in World War II. Profile America is in its 25th year as a public service of the U.S. Census Bureau.
Mine eyes have seen the glory of the coming of the Lord.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, M-O-N-S-O-N.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to each and every one of you who support us. As coming back from break, this was the end. The Korean War was never a declared war. And I think it was nearly 36,000 brave Americans lost their lives during that time. And the Chosin Reservoir was a very famous Marine battle. The three most famous Marine battles are Belleau Wood in World War I, Iwo Jima in World War II, and the Chosin Reservoir in World War in the Korean War. And this particular battle was fought in November, December in temperatures that reached 30 below. And our guys were out there for, about 36 days, but a long time. And it is just famous. And what happened was they were fighting the North Koreans, and then the Chinese came across the hills, and they were just really, really outnumbered. And I have had the honor to interview some of the guys that were at Chosin Reservoir. They really don't like to talk about it. It was a very, very difficult war. But as we think about this, those that have given their lives or been willing to give their lives for this great American idea, and it all started during the Revolutionary War. And on the line with me is a friend of mine, Ben Martin, who brings our heritage alive. And today we're going to be talking about the battles through New Jersey. He says the treachery of generals, some additional points in our history. So, Ben Martin, welcome to the show.
Hey, well, I'm glad to be here. Thank you a lot, Kim. How are you doing today?
Well, I am well. And I want people to know you are a graduate of West Point. You are a former Army Ranger, and you have this great love for our American heritage, and you bring it alive. And I quoted General Howe for our beginning of the show, and you've mentioned this before, and that it was when he was evacuating Boston. He said, "The rebels have done more in one night than my whole army could have done in a month." And that is American spirit, American ingenuity, American creativity, hard work. And so I thought that was a great quote to begin the show with today, Ben Martin.
Well, it sure is. Thank you. Thank you for remembering that. That's great. Hey, today we're going to talk about the great battles. We call it, we kind of put it all into a sum, and we say, we call it Washington's 10 days. It all boils down to this. And I was thinking of this. I was reflecting upon the many years that I've studied the Revolutionary War. And I think that in that reflection, there is something here that this was a great turning point, as great a turning point in this Revolutionary War as any of the other turning points that raised their head in this war. And this is really important because although there are some of these battles that we're going to talk about that most people don't even know about today, had Washington not done what he had done at this time and this turning point, the Revolutionary War could have been lost in its infancy, and nothing else would have mattered. Down would have gone our Declaration of Independence, and all the things that great things that happened after it would never have happened. So I think this is a very important point in our American history and the creation of our American heritage. So,
well, and
go ahead.
Let's get started with Washington's 10 days then.
Right. Well, we start off with the end. When we talked in June of our presentation then, it was about the battle for New York City. And the battle of New York City ended with the destruction of the complete destruction, really, of Fort Washington and the garrison that was in it at that time. Many of them were killed. They were given no quarter. And then the ones that weren't were captured and put into these prison ships in the New York Harbor, and many of them died agonizing deaths of starvation and disease there. So that was a very, what you would call, a very catastrophic way to end a big campaign. And it would have crushed most leaders, most military leaders, to see that happen. But it did not crush the spirit of George Washington. He remained focused on his mission, the glorious cause, and protecting the army and those soldiers with whom he was charged. His intentions quickly shifted to Fort Lee and the upcoming chase through New Jersey. At Fort Lee, Washington learned from the previous catastrophe at Fort Washington, that General Greene had to remove the supplies and munitions from Fort Lee and to take his forces away and join those in Washington's forces that were moving south through New Jersey. And as early as October, Washington had shown prescience by working with Greene to establish supply points along the most likely routes of withdrawal through New Jersey. To stock these supply points, Greene was then told to move the supplies from the vulnerable areas along the seacoast and supply these points that would be used. And they proved to be critical benefit to the American Army as it stayed ahead of the British and the Hessian forces pursuing them through New Jersey. The Patriot soldiers may have been without shoes and winter clothing during this chase, but they were relatively well-fed. And an important action that Washington took before heading south into New Jersey was to hold a meeting with the senior generals on 7 November to plan for the expected British moves into New Jersey. Washington had already established an extensive and reliable intelligence network to keep him informed of the British movements and their plans, and he encouraged all of his generals to do the same. And from his sources, he knew that despite the British threat to the New England states in the Hudson River, his biggest concern is the probable British attack south through New Jersey to capture the nascent American government and the capital city of Philadelphia. And in this council, Washington judiciously divided his army into four parts. And then he left two of the big parts under Lee in New York to guard against the British moving up the Hudson River and separating the New England states from the rest of America. And then he also gave part of this army to General Alexander, who was also called Lord Stirling, and to Colonel Hand to protect the northern New Jersey coast from British attacks from the sea, and especially from Staten Island. So he did that, and then he assigned 3,000 men to General Greene to defend Forts Washington and Lee from British attacks.
Now, Washington and Fort Lee, tell us again exactly where they were.
Fort Washington and Fort Lee were up at the northern part of Manhattan.
Okay.
Fort Washington is on the New York side, and Fort Lee is on the New Jersey side. So the British captured Fort Washington first, and in it they thought that at the time General Greene and everyone thought that this place was invincible, that we could defend there forever. But what they had failed to remember was there was no water well in the fort. It was a real problem. It was high up, and it was well guarded and all of that, and it had lots of ammunition and weapons in it. But, if you don't have water, you're kind of lost trying to keep your men alive. So anyway, that they captured that whole fort and all of the equipment and all of the supplies there. And it was quite a devastating loss to the Americans. When that happened, and then Washington divided the army into four parts for safety, and he took a part of the army. He didn't take the biggest part of the army. He took part of the army, and he went down into New Jersey. And Washington never looked at this as a retreat, but as an operation to defend New Jersey and Philadelphia from the suspected British attacks. He was always positive, and he always showed that positivity to his soldiers. So the British plan was that the Howe brothers realized that the weather was turning damp and cooler and that the harsh American winter would soon arrive. And they had a big army and navy to protect during the winter, and they wanted both to be ready to resume the attack when the weather warmed in 1777. So by early November, they devised a two-campaign plan to accomplish both of their objectives. The first operation of the plan was to capture a warm water port to protect this huge fleet. Between Admiral Howe and General Howe, they had more than half of the military might of the greatest, most powerful nation in the world at that time.
Wow.
So Admiral Howe moved his navy north to Rhode Island and to the port of Newport, and he used the warm water port there to protect his fleet. Now, General Howe had a bigger problem because he would have to he needed to have a place to protect his army, to provide them with food and forage, and to provide them with shelter during the winter. And so he sent an expedition south to occupy the eastern counties of New Jersey and take advantage of the rich farmland there that was unspoiled by war at this time for the food and forage that it could provide. Additionally, they could use the small towns to shelter their troops. And they believed this action would be accomplished quickly before winter. They had about a month left, since they thought that most of the beaten American army was north of New York City and could not respond, and that their operation, this occupation, would drive the remaining Continental troops out of the area. And they estimated these plans were good and would maintain the initiative while providing a solid base to resume operations in 1777. If the American army even survived the winter and another campaign was necessary. And most British did not, and the British military did not believe that the army, that the American army would last through the winter and that there would be no campaigns necessary in 1777.
Wow. As you set this up, this is pretty amazing. And General Howe and Admiral Howe were brothers, yes?
Yes, that's correct.
Okay, okay. Hey, Ben Martin, let's go to break. We're talking with patriotic historian, former Army Ranger, West Point graduate, Ben Martin. And this is about the New Jersey campaign, Washington's 10 days. You won't want to miss this. It just brings all of this alive. Before we go to break, though, Jen Hewlin, you know her. She's an entrepreneur. The owner of Water's Edge Winery, they've decided to close the winery, and actually it's no longer open to go by and enjoy food and wine, but there still is wine that she is selling, and if you reach out to her via the website or phone, give her a call, you can arrange a time to drop by and pick up some of the wine that they have, so be sure and check that out. That is wewdenver.com, and again, I know she'd love to see you. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back with Ben Martin.
With the federal government printing money, it looks like inflation is on the horizon. That is why you should lock in a low rate now on your mortgage. Lauren Levy with Polygon Financial Group is here to help. Lauren works with a variety of lenders to assist you in finding the mortgage that is just right for you. Locking in a low rate now will save you thousands of dollars over the life of your loan. Don't procrastinate. Don't wait any longer. Call Lauren today at 303-880-8881. That's 303-880-8881.
Would you have ever dreamed that freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of assembly, and freedom of religion would be under assault and attack in America? Unbelievably, it is happening right before our eyes. That is why it is important to keep free-thinking, independent voices on the airwaves, the internet, and social media. Kim Munson is one of those important voices. Help her keep independence alive. Go to KimMunson.com to contribute to join Kim in the battle of ideas raging in America today. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
Glory, glory, hallelujah.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. I am Kim Munson. Be sure and check out our website, Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. And thank you to all of you for listening, for supporting us. We are an alternative voice to all that's going on out there. And this is such a special show brought to you by the Harris family, Ben Martin, with all that is coming at you to step in and listen to reclaim our history is so important. So Ben Martin, let's continue on. The British didn't think that the Continental Army would make it through the winter, and it was pretty rough out there. So where do you want to go now?
So then they started this chase down through New York, down through New Jersey from New York. And, you know, I could sum up a lot of things here. So, but we talked about dividing the army into four parts and giving the largest part to General Lee. Now, General Lee had been an officer in the British Army, and he had accomplished quite a bit, and he had more experience than any other member, any other officer in the Revolutionary War in the Continental Army. And he really believed that he should be the commander-in-chief and not this ne'er-do-well George Washington. And he resented that the whole time. And so when Washington gave him the bigger part of the army, and he said, you know, you're up here to guard the Hudson River and to keep New England safe, he said, but listen, I'm going down because I believe it's more important to protect our government and our capital city, which they're trying to get to also. And he said, so if I go down there, and he said, then you see the major part of the British Army also cross the Hudson River and come after me, he said, I want you to then move directly to support me with this largest part of our army, because I can't survive with the limited amount of force that I have. But all through this time, when he's being chased by the British Army, by a superior force, He keeps sending messages to Lee to come support him, and Lee keeps disregarding those messages and basically being insubordinate. And not only insubordinate, but he wrote letters condemning Washington's leadership and decision-making ability, and that he was not fit to be the commanding general of the Continental Army.
Wow.
You know, and so with all of the things that Washington was facing, all of the other challenges, why this was his number one subordinate commander, and he was also part of the problem, not the solution. So this was terrible. Washington finally makes it all the way down to the bottom part of New Jersey to Trenton, and he crosses the river there. He has done all of these great things throughout there, sending his commanders ahead to capture all of the boats so that he can cross the river and the British cannot follow him. He does things like this. He's stockpiled resources all along the way, supplies, food for his troops. But his other commander, who had experience with the British Army, was General Gates. And General Gates had just completely left him. He hadn't even had any communications with him. And so when Washington finally makes it down in December and he's crossed the river safely, then all of a sudden he has been all of the letters and aides that he has sent to talk to these militia leaders start paying dividends, and members of the militia start coming in and joining his force again and building up his force again, Washington's force. But Lee has still not responded. He has been asking Lee since 20 November to come join him because the British Army is pursuing him, and Lee will not answer his directives to come down and support him. And then he can't get in touch with Gates, his other commander with great experience, and when he's down there in the late part of December and he's planning this great attack against the British to turn this tide that is against Americans, Gates comes through, drops off his 600 men that he has left of his army, and Washington says, hey, I need you to stay here and help me lead this battle. This is an important battle we're going to wage. Gates tells him, hey, sorry, bud. I'm headed to Congress to talk to people. And he leaves. What kind of commander leaves his commander-in-chief who needs his help and also his soldiers there?
Wow.
What kind of commander does that? Not one that you can respect. And they both come to show their true colors later on in the war. Lee, actually earlier than Gates. But so Lee keeps telling Washington, giving him all these excuses why he cannot come to support him. Finally, Washington gets very, very direct with him and says, I need these soldiers right now. And he tells Washington by message that he will send these soldiers to him. But he tells him that he's going to move them starting, he tells him this back in 2 December. But Washington doesn't receive Lee's troops until 20 December, and he doesn't receive them. Lee doesn't accompany the troops to Washington. He sends them with another subordinate commander to Washington. And in the meantime, Lee leaves his soldiers in the field, and he spends the night in a guest house with his aides and with his security forces. And he is captured the next morning.
Oh boy.
By the British forces. And he doesn't come back until 1778. He doesn't return. In fact, while he's with the British as a prisoner, he develops a plan for them on how to defeat the American army. I mean, you talk about great subordinates to have on your side. Anyway, all of this happens, and Washington is still trying to create this big impact, this battle to save the American spirit, to save the glorious cause. And he does this, he comes up with this plan to cross back over the river and attack the British at Trenton. And it's not really the British, it's the Hessians that are there that are fighting for the British. So they cross over. He plans four crossings with four subordinate commanders to cross with him. Three subordinate commands to cross with him. He's the fourth guy to cross. And during that night, there's a big storm, and three of the four units do not come across the river. And Washington is left with the main force on the other side without any supporting attacks to help them. And so he has to do this all on his own. And we've talked about this before. He crosses over on the night of Christmas when there's a big storm and the river is choked with ice and there's sleet and there's snow all over the place and the temperature has turned really cold. And he marches his shoeless men 9 miles to the Trenton. And because of the storm, the one good thing about the storm is it lets the Hessians let down their guard because they don't think anyone can cross the river at this time, and so they're not threatened by the Continental Army. But Washington proves them wrong. He marches the 9 miles with his men. With most of them are barefoot. They leave blood tracks in the snow.
Unbelievable.
And they have a successful attack in the morning. It's later in the morning than Washington had planned, but that's because it took so long to cross the river. And they were very successful. They killed about 30 of the, or maybe 20-plus men of the Hessians, and they wounded about 80, but they captured almost 1,000. And Washington showed magnanimity. When he captured these, he didn't treat the captured the way the captured had treated the American soldiers. He took care of them, he respected them, and he didn't mistreat them, and he didn't kill them, or he didn't put them in the conditions that would kill them. So this was a great benefit, and it had changed the whole complexion, and more people started coming out of the woodwork in the state of New Jersey and in the other parts of Pennsylvania to join the Revolutionary War under the Continental Army. And this was great, and it led to Washington thinking, hey, you know, now that I've reassumed the initiative, maybe I can keep this going. And so he devises his other plan, and he says, so he crosses back over again to the New Jersey side, and he again has a second battle of Trenton, and he knows that the British force is going to come down at him at this time, so he plans this delayed attack, and then he builds defenses on the south side of the Assunpink River, or creek, it really is what it really is, with only one bridge across it. And so he lures the British back into the town of Trenton, and he puts his men up in these great positions on the south side of the creek, and the British attack him, which is what he thinks they'll do because they're so mad that he had completely destroyed the forces that they had left at Trenton. And so he creates a lot of casualties there. And then after he does that, the British think now they've got him trapped on the south side of this creek, and in the next morning they're going to come and they're going to destroy him. But he has great intelligent networks, and he knows the way to go the back way to get out of the trap. And so during the night, he does the same thing that he did to escape from Brooklyn Heights, and he keeps the fires going, and he keeps the sounds going so that they think that the Americans are constantly improving their defensive positions throughout the night. He pads the wheels of the cannons and the wagons, and then he moves out late at night, back way along these really old roads through the countryside, two-lane roads. They're probably smaller than that, and they're not improved. And he makes it to Princeton and attacks Princeton there, which was a stronghold for the British. Before that time, when the British take all of their forces out to come attack Trenton. So all of the British forces are down in Trenton waiting for the next morning when they can attack Washington. Meanwhile, Washington has left, and he's moved up to Princeton where they have a small force, and he attacks them up there. So this completes the triad, where the three battles, the Battle of Trenton, then the Battle of Trenton, the Second Battle of Trenton and Assunpink Creek, and then finally Princeton. And at Princeton, he shows remarkable courage again. They arrive in Princeton, south of Princeton at Quaker Bridge, early in the morning before sunrise. It's about 6:50. When they get there, and the bridge cannot hold their wagons and their cannons. So they have to reconstruct a temporary bridge to get across. So they do that very quickly. They get the cannons across, and then they split the army like they did when they were going to Trenton, with Greene on the left and Sullivan's forces on the right. And Sullivan's forces start moving on a ridge up towards Princeton, and they're going to go around the southern and eastern part of Princeton and attack from that direction, because their intelligence tells them that that part of Princeton is undefended, or lightly defended, if not completely undefended. And then Washington has Greene's forces go straight up north in this valley road. It's actually a sunken road. And so they're moving out at this time. And as they are moving, as Washington is moving with the main force, which is Sullivan's, to the north and to the east, he looks back and he sees that a British force has already left Princeton and is headed to reinforce the forces of Cornwallis at Trenton. And he sends a message back to the forces, Greene's forces that are in this sunken road, that they have British forces up in front of them that they can't see yet, but that Washington can see. And so at that time, Mercer, who is leading Greene's forces, sends a small unit up to meet them. And when he does, Washington has not told him, because he doesn't know at the time, how big this force really is. And the force is led by Lieutenant Colonel Malhood, if you can believe that name. And so he goes up there, but he sends a small force up there that's about 120 men, and Malhood's force is over 600 men.
Wow.
And so they run into each other, basically, because they don't know. And then, obviously, faced with a larger force, and, again, the British have bayonets and Mercer's people don't. And so they fire at Mercer's men. Mercer is leading this small force while the rest of this force is trying to get up out of this sunken road. And so he is shot off of his horse. Mercer is shot off of his horse. And then the British decide under Malhood to attack, or to do a bayonet charge. And, of course, the Americans don't have any bayonets. So they run. They don't have anything else to do. They can't defend themselves. They run away from this bayonet charge. Washington sees all this, and he's kind of far away at the time, but he's up on a ridge so he can oversee everything. And he rides his horses along with his security forces back to take command of what is happening, because as these Americans under Mercer start running away, they run into the other force behind Mercer that's coming to reinforce him, and they get spooked too. And so everybody is just...
Ben, let's stop right there. That is such a cliffhanger. We need to take a quick break. This is Ben Martin bringing alive this particular battle. And before we do that, though, Castlegate Knife and Tool brings these shows to you. They're a great family-owned business located right here in Sedalia, Colorado. So whether or not you are a chef or a collector or a sportsman, Castlegate Knife and Tools, the place for you. Check out castlegate.com. That's castlegate.com. We're going to go to break. We'll be right back.
All of Kim's sponsors are an inclusive partnership with Kim and are not affiliated with or in partnership with KLZ or Crawford Broadcasting. If you would like to support the work of the Kim Munson Show and grow your business, contact Kim at her website, kimmunson.com. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com.
His truth.
Welcome back to the Kim Munson Show. Be sure and check out our website. That's Kim Munson, MONSON.com. Sign up for our weekly newsletter there. You can email me at kim@kimmunson.com as well. On the line with me is Ben Martin, patriotic historian. We're talking about George Washington. Some of our forces, they are running away because there is a bayonet charge. Imagine that. George Washington goes back to take command. Let's finish this up, Ben Martin, because it's absolutely fascinating. What happens?
Okay, so this is a really fascinating time. He goes back. He takes command. He gets these guys. He instills confidence in them on the battlefield with all of these other things happening, all this chaos going around him, and he leads them back against the British. And the British are unnerved by this. Washington is leading them forward. They're all in order and everything like that. He is leading them from the front. He gets up to about 30 yards away from the British, the organized British forces. He halts his men and he gives them the orders to fire. And he's in between both forces. Well,
unbelievable.
It is unbelievable. His staff, his security, they all cover their eyes and they just don't want to see this horrific scene. But as the smoke clears, Washington is still in the same place and he is unscathed, and it just completely unnerves the British. And then the Americans start attacking and the British start running, and they go back into Princeton, into the halls in Princeton, and then the American forces surround them, and eventually, with the help of Alexander Hamilton's artillery, they force the British within the halls of Princeton to surrender. So now, all of a sudden, Washington has all of these forces, and he gets his men organized again, and they remember they have been up all night. They have been fighting all night. They've been marching all night. And he has a choice. He can go all the way back to the big British supply point in New Brunswick and take all of their supplies because there's nobody there and all of their money. Or he can remove his men to the safety of Morristown. And he makes the magnanimous decision, prudent decision, to move his men because they're tired, they're sleepy, and they could be overcome by the British forces that are now moving out of Trenton towards them. And so all of this shows his magnanimity and his leadership ability and his generalship, and it changes the whole course of the war, and it brings the soldiers back into the army. It rids New Jersey of the British soldiers there and their influence, and it establishes his gravitas as the commander-in-chief. And to just sum it up, my history professor and a former superintendent of West Point, General Dave Palmer, summed up this thing, and he said, had Washington done nothing before or after those 10 days, 25 December 1776, to to 3 January 1777, he would still go down in history as one of its greatest commanders. And so with
that, remarkable. Yeah.
We can wrap up this whole remarkable time and this great and important and critical turning point in our history and in the history of the Revolutionary War.
Well, and to that, Ben, I was doing some research after you were on last time, and Washington is the only 6-star general that we have in our military. And I didn't know that until just recently. Steve and I were talking about what were we doing during history class. We weren't paying attention, but we're paying attention now. We have 1 minute left. What is the final thought you want to leave with our listeners today?
Yeah, I just want to say that Washington established for all of us, all of the people that have ever been in the military, in the United States military, the whole concept of the servant leader. And he showed that time and again while he led his army all throughout the Revolutionary War. And then he turned back power as the Cincinnatus of the West. And it is so important. And next time I'll have a quote for you about Washington as the Cincinnatus. But he gives back the power that was given to him complete absolute power. He gives it back to the Congress, and he goes back to his form.
Ben Martin, it is remarkable when we see what's going on today with people that have taken power during this pandemic, and they will not give it back. Totally antithetical to Washington. Ben Martin,
exactly.
Thank you so much.
All right. I enjoyed it, Kim. Thank you.
Okay. And be sure, my friends, our quote for today is from Henry Knox. He says, "The eyes of all America are upon us. As we play our part, posterity will bless or curse us." And that's very apropos for today, too. So, my friends, today, be grateful, read great books, think good thoughts, listen to beautiful music, communicate and listen well, live honestly and authentically, strive for high ideals, and like Superman, stand for truth, justice, and the American way. My friends, you are not alone. God bless you, and God bless America.
And I don't want no one to cry, but tell them if I don't survive.
Views and opinions expressed on KLZ 560 are those of the speaker, commentators, hosts, their guests, and callers. They are not necessarily the views and opinions of Crawford Broadcasting or KLZ Management, employees, associates, or advertisers. KLZ 560 is a Crawford Broadcasting God and Country station.
KLZ AM HD Denver, AM 560 and 100.7 FM.